Rachel, and I am a third-year DPT student from Alabama.
Hi, everyone. I'm Robin. I'm a new professional working in pediatric outpatient and early intervention, and I'm from Pennsylvania.
And we are the new hosts of the APTA Pediatrics Students and New Professionals podcast.
We are super excited for this new season and for all of you to meet our new guests.
We interviewed established pediatric physical therapists who work in various pediatric settings and shared their expertise and wisdom with us.
We love chatting and getting to know our first guest. We hope you love this interview as much as we did.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the SNAP podcast. My name is Rachel Thompson, and I will be your host for today's episode. Today, we have the honor of being joined by Molly, who's going to talk to us more about the outpatient pediatric setting. First, I just want to say thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to meet with us today. So can you kind of tell us about like how you got to where you are now in your career?
So I graduated with my doctorate from the University of Missouri in 2018, and then I went straight into a pediatric residency program at Gillette Children's. I have been fortunate from the start of my pediatric career in school up until my clinical career now to have mentors that have guided me, believed in me, pushed me to do things and be bigger. So that has really been a tremendous help in getting me to where I currently am. I'm still at Gillette. I have been there 4 years with a gap year in between that time, and I am blessed with the best team. So we, you know, thinking about advancing your career or even advancing your clinical skills, I have a team that really believes in each other and is willing to bounce ideas off of each other and believes in the crazy. I think everybody needs to be a little to be in pediatrics and be willing to try things that are different, because even if you have a diagnosis of cerebral palsy, not everybody looks the same with that. Right. And being willing to try different things that you might have picked up from a different diagnosis has been really fun.
Oh, that's awesome. Can you like go into a little bit more just like the typical day kind of working in outpatient?
Absolutely. So I'm in an offsite, so I'm not directly in the hospital. So all of our therapists are 4 days a week. I work 4/10s. So I have Tuesdays off. And that's pretty traditional across our outsites. Our therapists on site at our main hospital campus either work 4/10s or 5/8s. Typical day is anywhere from 7 to 8 patients, mostly treatments, 1 or 2 evaluations. We have 60 minutes for each session, which is really, really nice because it allows for some internal documentation depending on the type of patient that you have. If it's a developmental kid, that doesn't really happen. My hands are pretty occupied during that time and not necessarily on my computer. And then again, we run a lot of different clinics. Gillette's a specialty hospital, so we have a torticollis clinic that we partner with, and we do same day add-on evals. Our orthopedic clinics, we have same day add-on evals, and if you're part of those clinics, it's a little bit more eval heavy, but it could be hit or miss. You could have one in your blocked time frame of 5 hours, or you could get 4. So it just varies day to day, but I would say typically it's no more than 2 evaluations a day.
That's cool. So where do like most of your referrals come from then? Is it usually being a part of a hospital? Is it typically from Gillette or in the community?
I would say it's pretty blended. So Gillette is really known in the state of Minnesota for our complex care and our complex pediatrics. Mm-hmm. Outside the tumors and the cancer, that really goes to the University of Minnesota Children's. But when it comes to kids with complex movement disorder or complex needs, Gillette is kind of the hub in Minnesota. So we get referrals from our providers, but I see about as many external referrals from our local pediatricians partnering with our NICUs. And then we do a lot of outreach. So we do see a lot of kids from the greater Minnesota areas that pop in for an evaluation, and we either do consultative services where we're seeing them quarterly, or we'll pick them up virtually so they can still have access to care. But 50-50 split from internal versus external.
Okay, cool. Do you have like a favorite type of diagnoses or patients that you like to treat?
If any of my patients are listening, you're all my favorite. For the developmental kids and early intervention, I love working with that 0 to 5, then they get real spicy around 5 and super opinionated, and it's a little harder to motivate them. And then adolescents, teenage kids, when it comes to the sports med, I run the intensive program. And so our patient population is 15 months to 9 years of age. So I would say that's kind of the areas.
That's awesome. So when it comes to like your role in the outpatient setting, do you do any evaluations for special equipment for kiddos or anything like that?
We do a lot. Gillette does anywhere from 60 to 75% of the equipment for the state of Minnesota and surrounding states. So we have specific equipment evals that are like 60 minutes just for walkers, gait trainers, standers. We have 90-minute evaluations for joint seating evals. So if we're looking at a manual wheelchair or a power wheelchair, and then within our episode of care, if we're trialing equipment, it's the responsibility of that therapist or the therapist team that's working together to connect with vendors and then write for the equipment that you've decided upon in that plan of care if it's appropriate. I would say at any given time, I'm probably working on 3 to 5 pieces of equipment for different patients.
Yeah, that's intense. Did you feel prepared walking into that? I guess like as a new grad, or at least like I'm a student right now. So like, I feel like we don't have as much exposure when it comes to like, you know, evaluating for equipment. How did you kind of grow in your career? I guess like get ready for that.
Question. It's not something as a new grad mentor, it's not something we dump right on you guys. We let you ease in for 6 months, partner with an experienced therapist who's doing equipment, allow you to play with the equipment if you have stuff on site or if you know that you're going to bring something on so that you're familiar with it. There are so many different options of equipment. Mm-hmm. Nobody know it all, but that's where your partnership with your vendors really comes into play. You start small, right? Your first piece of equipment isn't going to be a standing power chair. That's just way too big of an ask. You're going to start with that reverse walker or an easy gait trainer, right? You feel confident with that. A lot of information is out there on how to justify. It's a good opportunity to partner with your mentor. Once you get comfortable with those smaller pieces of equipment, it's easier to get into the bigger pieces of equipment, but you don't go for the woolly mammoth right out the
gate. No, that's awesome. So you said, what other like specialties or therapists do you work closely with in this setting?
We partner often with our OTs and our SLPs, and then we have a lot of interdisciplinary clinics. So I am constantly talking and bothering the orthopedic surgeons, you name it. If I can get my hands or my mouth in their direction where I can make the eye contact with them, I always asking questions, always communicating, partnering. That's not always the case depending on the system that you're in, but open communication is key. And with our school therapists, we have ROIs or releases of information that we have families sign right away if we find out that they're in the school. So the entire team is able to talk to one another, but that way we're all working towards the same thing or seeing what, if they're thinking of equipment, what equipment might they be working towards or what skills are they working towards at home? So we're not duplicating services, but we're partnering with each other.
Right. No, that's awesome. Yeah. I feel like communication is definitely key when you have like so many people you're working with, like in this setting, you know. Why did you choose to work in a hospital outpatient pediatrics clinic versus a private practice outpatient clinic?
Fun fact, I have actually worked in every setting of pediatrics since I've obtained my license. You know, the residency I was in, acute inpatient and then outpatient. But then when I graduated from the residency program, pre-pandemic, I spent a year in a private practice clinic in Chicago, and I really enjoyed my time. My husband is an orthosurgery resident, so he matched to Minnesota. So we moved back, and I actually worked in the school system. I have enjoyed my time everywhere I've been, have been fortunate to have all of those experiences, but I fell in love with the complexity at Gillette and the ability to have that interdisciplinary communication and bothering the physicians on a regular basis was something that I truly enjoyed and I missed and is what I was seeking after having my other experiences. But I had great mentors in the school setting and loved my school team. It wasn't an easy decision by any means, because that was very rewarding for me too, and just so different. It challenged my brain in a different way.
Wow, that's so cool. Yeah, I mean, like just having that experience, because school-based like PT, you know, is so different than, you know, outpatient. Like I feel like in pediatrics, you know, all these types of different settings really do vary. That's really cool that you have that experience.
I would say it's the one thing that's probably not universal across state. Your rules are different depending on the state that you're in. So if you move and you're in a different school system and you're looking to doing something differently, that's I think that's tricky and also like a fun challenge to figure out how do you blend what you've previously done to what you do now. So they have a tough job and they should get a lot of credit.
Yeah, no, that's so cool. That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. How do you work with the episodic care model in the outpatient setting? And then like, how do you balance the episodes of care with patients who have lifelong disabilities?
Great question. Episodes of care is a really hot topic right now. Gillette has been leading the charge with that since 1998 and then published the clinical practice guideline in 2008. So I have a little bit of an advantage in that our families have heard that spiel for quite some time. But truth be told, I am a big believer in it. I think it's really important to talk about at evaluation, to talk about at midway, and to talk about at discharge, right? We want therapy to be a means to an end, right? Therapy isn't supposed to be for life. It's supposed to give you a full life to allow you to do the things that you want to do. And then you come back and see us when you've found a new challenge, or you're like, oh, this is tough for me. I really want to be better at this. So then we can come back to the drawing board and figure out how do we maximize that skill in your life so you then can be fulfilled. And that's really the way that I approach it with parents. I would say the exception to that rule, though, is my friends about under 2 or 2.5. And then our post-surgical kids, right? We know that one time a week for 12 weeks is not appropriate for them, especially after a surgery. We really need to see them more. And the bigger the surgery, the longer, right, you're going to see them. So we do have some kids that are in, we'll say, plans of care for 18 months, starting at a higher frequency and reducing to a lower frequency post-surgical. I run the intensive program, so we're 2 hours a day, 5 days a week for 3 weeks and a mandatory 3-month break on the back end. The break needs to occur. You need to go use your skills outside of the clinic to see if you can use your skills outside of the clinic. We have them set up with an evaluation before they even discharge, just to make sure that parents feel comfortable and that we're not missing any opportunities to help them maximize their growth.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. That's really cool. Yeah, I feel like it definitely is a hot topic, but like having that advantage at Gillette, that's awesome. When you're working with families in this setting, I know you said like, you know, trying to get them to use those skills outside the clinic. How do you keep them engaged and like implementing those home programs with your families that you treat?
You know, think about it yourself, right? If you only go to the gym one time, this is what I tell my families, if you only go to the gym one time a week, you're not going to see any gains, or it's going to take you a year to see gains. So I talk about it in that regard. And then I usually only do 3 exercises. And if it's a little, I do 1 and I have them practice it every single day. And if it goes well, then I'll give them a new one the next week or in the 2 weeks that I see them. So I'm not overwhelming parents that probably have other kids. And they also need to get some exercise in for themselves, or catch a coffee break, or do some of things that make them feel human and not just parents. So I really try to structure it so that it doesn't feel like I'm adding 15 minutes to a day that already feels daunting. I'm trying to build it in, if we're working balance, build it into brushing their teeth. If you're working torticollis, build it into diaper changes, build it into the way that you're carrying kids. You try to make it a part of their life and a habit so it doesn't feel like it's additional. And for the older, I'm not above bribery. Target Dollar Section and I are good friends. I have kids pick a prize. If they show that, you know, they did their home program consistently for 2 weeks, then they get to have that prize. I keep it for them. They know what they're working towards. So that way they're motivated and they're taking ownership of their home program as well. So parents, again, aren't having to do it all.
Yeah, no, I love that. That's awesome. Yeah, because I feel like families, they get so busy already. So kind of like meeting them where they at, I think that's really good answer. So thank you. When it comes to this setting, what is your most rewarding part about working in this setting for you?
Oh my gosh, so many things. I would say I have three big ones, right? The privilege of getting to be part of those big milestones for kids and seeing some steps before parents see steps, or getting to experience the joy of all of those big milestones with families and really getting to help them progress is probably one of the most, if not the most rewarding piece for me. My team, I would be remiss not to count my team in for being amazing and being the reason, other than my patients, that I enjoy going to work even on tough days or having had a tough patient. My team is just top notch and I can't talk about them enough. If you gave me another 40 minutes, I could give you all the details on them. And then innovation, right? So being able to take what you've learned or take what you've read, and your families are really with you and they're really willing to try because they have big goals and big dreams for their kids, and you have the skills to make those happen. So the innovation in pediatrics and trying new things, I get excited, and you shouldn't be afraid to try, right? As long, do no harm, right? First principle, we all learn that really early on. But a new handling technique isn't going to do harm. You know, trying a new toy isn't going to do harm. Any way that you can find them to engage and build those skills with you. The challenge, I should say, a challenge along with innovation is what keeps me going all the time.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It's working with children, it's its own challenge, but it's fun. Do you have any other roles in your clinic besides patient care?
I do. So I'm a primary investigator on the intensive research study. So that's my study that I work with our research team really closely when it comes to consenting patients and recruiting patients, along with a couple of my team members who we've brought in on the project. I'm a mentor in the residency program. I sit on the committee. I'm part of not just the interview process, but then I'm one of your main didactic instructors if you join our residency team. So I'm with the residents a lot in those regards. I also help mentor the new employees. That's been a really fun and really rewarding. I'm a clinical instructor and have a student starting with us in January.
That's a lot. For the people out there that are listening to this that might be interested in pursuing a residency, I would be amiss to ask, like, do you have any advice for people that are interested?
If you're interested, definitely attend some of the meetings or reach out to the program directors. Everybody is really responsive if you just have direct questions. Even if it's just a question and that can help you decide whether you want it or you don't want it or it's not the right time. You don't have to have pediatric experience to apply to half of the residencies. So pay attention to those. You know, validate your experiences that you have had, right? It doesn't always have to be PT related. It can be anything related. If, you know, you worked as a server or you worked in customer service in different ways, like, use those big experiences to broaden your application. And you guys are part of that pandemic graduation class. So talk about that, right? You guys had different stressors. You had to be adaptable in different ways from previous classes. So you guys have an advantage when it comes to virtual care, an advantage when it comes to all of that technology. And be honest, right? Have fun. Be who you are, paper and in person.
That's awesome. Do you recommend, for somebody that's interested in pursuing a residency, do you recommend doing it right after PT school or maybe working in this pediatric setting for X amount of time before applying for a residency program?
You know, I think both are beneficial. And honestly, it comes down to finances, right? If you can financially swing it and make it happen to do it post-graduation, knowing that you're not going to be paid a full salary, that the hours are going to be long and different, and then you potentially have to move away from your family and you feel like you can make that work for you. I think as a new grad, it was wonderful. I loved it. I enjoyed every minute of it. But we've also had people in our program who have worked for a year, 18 months, or almost 2 years before they came and joined us. They were typically split between pediatrics and adults, or they were neuro-based and had some peds and then came and saw us. But it depends on what works best for you, right? Residency, outside from all of the didactic and the overwhelming amount of information that you gain, which is so fun, and you're a sponge, it's the mentorship, right? So if you find really good mentors post-graduation, or if that's really what you're looking for, a residency can really build that skill. If you're looking to transition between a small private outpatient and you want to get into the hospital setting, but you're not sure if you want inpatient or outpatient or acute, residencies can really help you tease that out as well, because most of them have experiences in multiple settings. So you can really find your passion area in the safety of the residency, which is great.
Oh, right. I didn't think about it kind of like that. I know, like, as a student, a lot of times there are not clinical experiences in the acute care inpatient setting, or it might be a little bit more difficult to kind of see all those different areas. That's some really good advice. So thank you. Molly, I know you said you're a clinical instructor. For students that are going into their clinical experiences and this is their first time working or being introduced to the pediatric setting, do you have any advice for them specifically as a student still in school and preparing to take on that role?
Know what type of learner you are, right? So if you're a visual learner, you're an auditory learner, you're a kinesthetic learner, know that type. If you haven't done it, find a quick test online, take it. So that way, if you feel like that meets what your needs are, tell your clinical instructor right away. Set your own expectations. You know, you guys all have that CPI, but you know, have that sit down that first week with your CI and, you know, what are your expectations, your personal expectations, right? For your clinical rotation, what are you hoping to see? What are you looking to gain out of it? So if you go in with that type of plan as a clinical instructor, we can make sure that we're setting up the right experiences for you. We're trying to like look at not just our caseload, but our other people's caseloads to see if you could see some of those different diagnoses and get familiar with those. If I know what type of learner you are, I know how to give you feedback that's going to be beneficial for you and myself, right? How to help you learn. Some people do well with the C1, do one, teach one. Some people don't, right? And if we don't know that in advance, I am notorious for throwing you in because that's how I learn best. But I always walk you through it. I'm there helping you get your hands on. But if that's not the style of learner that you are, if I know that in advance, I won't do it to you because I don't want you to feel uncomfortable. My biggest thing is ask questions. Always ask questions. You know, even if it's a new patient to you and you're like, yeah, I have a ton of questions, your CI will tell you it's appropriate to ask with this family or write them down. Please don't forget them. And then we can like debrief afterwards. Most of my families are comfortable with questions being asked throughout. And I really enjoy that too, because as a CI, I want you to ask me why I'm doing something, because then I also have to think like, well, why am I doing this? You know, and I do know there is a reason, but I think it just helps everybody when you talk those things out or ask those questions. There truthfully isn't a stupid question. Just make sure it's a phrase in an appropriate way. So that way you're getting to the root of your question. Be open to learning, be open to feedback, right? And if the feedback's not delivered in a way that's helpful for you, give that feedback, right? We all want the soon to be to feel comfortable and to feel confident going in, because we know that it's a tough job.
Yes. No, that's great advice. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Do you have anything else that you could share or leave us with in terms of, you know, students and new grads just working in the pediatrics setting in general?
Don't be afraid to be fun and be bold. Kids love to play, right? If you aren't a big kid yourself, that's okay. But don't be afraid to find that big kid in yourself again. It builds rapport better. It allows for you to bond easily with your patients. And then it allows for you to try those more challenging skills and really get them to believe in you as a therapist and you to believe in them as a patient. And, you know, as a parent of my own with a little, you want somebody fun and who's engaging and who pays attention to your kids' interests, right? Don't be afraid to spend time asking about those interests. Evaluations don't have to be so serious all the time. It's important to get your outcome measures in, sure, but it's okay to be silly or roll around on the ground, or, you know, if they're really into Fortnite, if you know nothing about it, ask all of the questions that you can maybe think of about it. So that way they're engaged with you and they're going to buy in to the asks that you might make of them later. The one other thing I would say is your skin will get thicker. Working in pediatrics is sometimes an emotional roller coaster. You have parents who are coming for the first time and didn't anticipate having a kid that would have different abilities. So that's hard for them. And then they're going to ask you to look into your crystal ball and tell them, are they going to walk someday? Are they going to do this someday? And your job is to say, you know what? We're excited for what they're doing right now. And we're going to take all the steps that it can take. But I'm not going to keep trying if you're not going to keep trying. And don't take things personally. Kids are funny, but they see everything, everything. If you have a hair out of place, you wear a Band-Aid in a different spot, they'll call you out on it. Don't take it personally. They do it to everybody. Laugh with them when they do silly things. Help them with their manners, right? We have a lot of gaseous friends in pediatrics. You know, it's okay to laugh at a toot or a fart or, you know, and help them say, excuse me, but you are one of the biggest pieces of their life for quite some time, especially those kids that have lifelong disabilities. Keep the professional boundaries, but it's okay to have a personal relationship. So that way you can ask them to do the hard things and they're going to believe you. And you tell them it's hard, but we're going to try it anyway. And then we're going to try it again the next time until we figure out which way is going to work for us. But I think, you know, being silly and being a kid and remember what it's like to be at that age. If you can, I'm getting older. I don't know if I can remember what it's like to be 10 years old anymore, but I can remember 16 still, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree. Kids are very honest, very, you know, no filter. I think that's some great advice. Molly, I want to thank you so much for being here with us today and for doing this, sharing your experiences. You have such a wealth of knowledge and we really appreciate it. I know everybody will benefit from listening to this.
Thank you everyone for listening today. I learned a lot from Molly and her experience in outpatient. We hope you did as well. Look out for our next episode coming in February, and make sure to follow the Academy of Pediatric PT on Twitter and Instagram, and Pediatric Physical Therapy on YouTube for all updates. The social media handles are all included in the episode notes. Thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you next month.